Welcome back to Hakuna Lorcana, a worry-free podcast about the Disney stories we love and the Lorcana cards they inspire. I'm Caleb.
And I'm Katie. Today, we are talking about Zootopia, the 2016 movie that taught us to try everything and that anyone can be anything. But before we dive into the lore, Caleb, how was your weekly lore count?
Great question, Katie. I would say my lore count is at a cool 12. Not in like a bad way, but just in like a... It's been a pretty chill week in Lorcana for me, which isn't a bad thing. You know, I got to go to the casual night at our LGS on Friday, and that was really fun. I got to play with one of the last kids, which was great. And I got to play my Simba Beast double feature deck, and it actually did pretty good, which was pretty fun. You know, to see it kind of work out, even though I'm only limiting myself to two movies. You know, hopefully sometime soon, I kind of mentioned it in episode zero about these double feature decks, but hopefully we can go into more detail because it's pretty fun. And as you're well aware, I have a few Enchanted Pride lands in that deck. And I'll tell you what, it's pretty fun when you, you know, draw for turn and you pick up an Enchanted and you're like, oh, that's a special card, you know?
I do have to say, I looked over and I was like, now I know why Caleb really wanted to play that deck. Cause yeah, it was blinding. Everybody had to put on sunglasses. It was a hazard look at. It was so shiny.
I had the shiny cards in there for sure. And I think I'm going to keep like the Enchanteds to like the theme deck. You know, it makes sense in my mind. Cause it's not like Pride Lands is like over $100 or anything like that. You know, like the Legendary Beast that's in my deck is just as expensive as the Enchanted Pride Lands, so it feels okay. And I also know I'm not really going to be switching that card out. Like, it's the only location from the Lion King, so I'm going to, you know, keep it in the deck. Whereas if I got like Enchanted, I don't know, like Lady Tremaine's for my Ruby Sapphire deck, it's like, well, maybe she'll come out of the deck at some point, you know? So I don't know. That's my rationality for it, I guess.
Well, and the good news is, I mean, Pride Lands are now seeing some play in Steel Song. I know Zan, I think that's how you say his name. He released like a Pride Land Steel Song. I tried to play it. It's fun. It's different. So there's hope for your Pride Lands to exist.
Yeah, I've seen his gameplay with that, and I think it's brilliant with all of the item removal that's running around. To be able to do that, but then, you know, you hook up a prince or a king to it and you get that reduction on playing characters, but it's like every character. I don't know. It's pretty cool. Anyways, let's think, what else? My Ruby Sapphire deck, I kind of went through a crisis with the last few days. I don't think I filled you in on this, but I was like, man, it has such a bad matchup into like these fast decks. I need to switch. Like, I need to go back to Ruby Amethyst, or I need to try something with Steel. And so I'm like really racking my brain about it. I think I'm still going to like run my Ruby Sapphire deck, but I might also have like an Emerald Steel or even an Amber Steel deck like built just in case. I don't know. It's stressing me out trying to pick a deck.
Well, welcome to the panic party. I've been in the panic party. Very firmly since my Steel Song lost 2 weeks ago, because I'm having it. But I mean, we could talk about this forever, but like the meta is so diverse in the sense, I know some people say it isn't, but it is, because if it wasn't diverse, it wouldn't be so hard. And it's you in every deck. Then once you pick a deck, it's tweaking it. How aggressive do you want to be? How controlled do you want to be? Especially, I mean, gosh, I've moved the curve on my two decks I've been playtesting every day several times of how fast I want to be or not. So if you're having a crisis out there, listeners, know that the crisis is, it's real, and everyone seems to be well, there's some people that seem competent and good for them, but I'm not one of them.
Yeah, we're not living by our philosophy, you know. We say it's a worry-free podcast, but we're a little worried over here.
Well, the podcast is worry-free.
The podcast is worry-free. Yeah. That's right. Then Caleb and Katie, you know, we have
I'm not worry-free.
Yeah. So I'm also really happy to see people getting tickets for Atlanta and Lille. You know, so cool that Ravensburger has been able to, like, open those up and make sure that people can go. I didn't even put myself on the wait list because I'm really shooting for a few of the other locations, like Chicago or Fort Worth. And anyways – but I'm really excited to see that, you know, some people that got you know, that missed tickets the first time are getting them now. And it seems like, you know, maybe not 100% of people, but at least like the vast majority of people who want to go to Atlanta are going to be able to get a ticket and play. So,
yeah.
So that's super awesome.
I think, as I think you've pointed out, other people pointed out, Rappensperger is listening and they're excited to hear our feedback and take the feedback. So
yeah,
it's all exciting stuff.
Certainly is. So, Katie, what about you? Where's your lore count at?
Yeah, I think this is a nice smooth water. So, you know, maybe 10, 12, but like in a glass half full kind of 10.
Exactly,
12,
exactly.
Hard turn. I my news that I'm excited about is they've been releasing images from Tiana's Bayou.
Yeah.
So I am a diehard Splash Mountain fan, and I think Twitter, you know, if you want to have a time where you feel lots of people, like you're like, is everyone screaming at each other? Twitter's a great place to be.
True.
Sometimes, because yeah, there's lots of posts about people being like, can you believe this? But I was happy, can you believe this? Because I love audio animatronics. And as a theme park fan, you know that screens either in the background or on faces has been a big problem. Not a problem, but a controversy in theme park world.
Yeah.
So it's very exciting that they're making these elaborate, beautiful animatronics with like faces that look real, where you would, you can like, you feel like you're in the cartoon. I can't wait.
Yeah,
so
that's awesome. I mean, yeah, man, it's been a while since I've been to a theme park, but I can remember like going through certain attractions, and they're definitely relying on screens and animation to kind of, you know, tell the story and everything like that. But to see, you know, I've seen some of these things on Twitter where they're, it's physical animatronics, you know, that I remember from when I was a kid. And that's super cool to see.
Yes. So, and it's tricky because, you know, if I, you know, this is my, our podcast, so I can stand on my little soapbox. So I'm standing
that's right,
up on
you
it.
Do it.
So I know people can get very defensive in theme parks, and I totally don't blame them, because when you think about theme parks, it is a place you go with your family, your friends. It's a place where you make memories. So
yeah.
I totally understand why people get defensive. But to quote Walt Disney, I'm on my soapbox. So I'm allowed to do it.
Of course.
He said, we keep moving forward, opening new doors and doing new things because we're curious, and curiosity keeps leading us down new paths. Hmm. So, you know, keep moving forward, try new things. It's exciting. I love Splash Mountain, and I love the memories I have with it. But I cannot wait for Tiana's Bayou Adventure, especially because I think they'll have scents on the ride. And any ride where there's scents, I'm excited. I'm like, yes, let me go smell that ride.
Okay.
So
I can dig it. Yeah. I must confess, I've never been on Splash Mountain.
I used to ride it like a psycho. I worked in Disney World for 4 months, which that was on our Instagram. Follow us on Instagram.
Yeah.
So I would go after work. We'd go to Magic Kingdom because we would close and we had like 30 minutes. So we'd drive, we'd run into the park, and then we'd go ride Splash Mountain until they kicked us off. And like they would let us just stay on. And we'd ride that ride because it'd be cold at night. And, you know, Floridians don't want to be on a water ride at night. But we're hardy Midwesterners, and we're like, let's go on a water
ride. Oh, yeah,
we
can do this just fine. Yeah.
So, and it's a long ride. That was the other thing. I think one of the reasons I love it is it's like a long ride.
Yeah.
To get on.
What is the ride time for Splash Mountain?
I think it's like 6 minutes or so, which I mean, compared to Tron, the newest ride is a minute. So
what?
You get a lot of bang for your buck.
Yeah, you really
Splash
do.
Mountain.
So the thing about Splash Mountain, like getting wet, like I'm just like, okay, am I really going to get wet at 11 a.m. and then have to, you know, stay wet? But
that's why you ride it at night. See,
yeah,
it's all coming together.
You're right.
Your day's over.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Might as well just get wet, and then you hop in the minivan and mom drives you home.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, exactly. So it is, if you're going to ride a water ride, do it at the end of the day. To Caleb's point.
Yeah.
That is a terrible way to start a day at a theme park. Is
yeah.
Your shoes squishing for the rest of the day. So that was my most exciting thing in the week. Obviously, as I mentioned, lots of anxiety about set tournaments, but that's not here. That's outside this podcast. That's me personally. You can hear all about it on Twitter, where I'm loudly complaining to anyone that will read.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and thanks for finding that Walt Disney quote. I mean, super cool. And it really does tie into our movie for the day, I think. So as Katie mentioned, you know, we're talking about Zootopia today. So Katie, tell me about your background with Zootopia.
Yeah. So this movie, I watched it again last night. It is such a delicious visual treat. Mm. I saw it in theaters back when it came out. So that was 2016. And I think the thing that stuck with me then and sticks with me now is just it's one of those movies where I want to crawl inside the movie. I love the world of it. It's just so pretty. There's just this endless amount of Easter eggs. Like every second there's an Easter egg somewhere.
Yeah.
I really liked the movie the first time I saw it. Now, there's been, between the time it came out and now, and like the internet, you can see some criticism about the movie because, as we'll talk about, this movie's an allegory. And like any allegory, you know, you're going to kind of try to be like, okay, well, how does it relate to our real world? But I think it's good to just remember this is still a Disney movie. It's a movie that's designed to be entertaining and fun. So I think it's a good movie. I think overall it's one of those movies that I love watching and listening to, and I love the characters. And yeah, watching it last night, I'm like, you know what? I do like this movie. So it was like a dip. Like I loved it and then I kind of forgot about it. Now I love it again.
Yeah, totally. Well,
what about you?
Yeah, I resonate with that because well, to an extent, I guess. I didn't see the movie when it came out. Didn't really know about it. My falling back in love with Disney and Disney movies happened during COVID because I got Disney Plus when I, you know, got bored like everybody else.
Yeah.
And so there was really like a decade or two of movies that I like hadn't seen. And so I just remember watching Zootopia one day and loved it. I was like, I have no idea what this movie's about. I don't really even remember when Disney released it, but I'm so glad they made this movie. To your point, like, it is such a treat to watch. You can just tell, like, they went all out with the animation on this one. There are certain scenes where there's, like, sunlight coming in at an angle, like, during the golden hour or something, and everything just looks, like, so beautiful. And it's also a very character-driven story, which I love. Like, by the end of the movie, you just, like, you just want to be Judy and Nick's friend, you know?
Yeah.
Like, the movie ends with them, like, in that cop car, you know? And you're just like, I want to ride along with them. Like, that sounds like so much fun. So, yeah, it's a great movie.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, watching it juxtaposed to The Sword and the Stone because, you know, last week I talked about how, like, you know, this movie was a lot of, like, vignettes, situations that ended, like, you know, weren't necessarily like a hardcore traditional beginning, climax of the plot and then finishing. This movie was like a true, like, you're going with these characters. It's a mystery. It was like, you know, a buddy cop movie, which is, you know.
Well, it's actually a pretty complex plot, I would say, even for a kids movie because, you know, for the first, like, half of the movie, maybe two-thirds of the movie, you think the resolution is going to come when she finds the missing animals, right? But then there's still like 30 minutes of movie left and there's plot twist and, you know, all this complexity and stuff like that. That's like, oh, it's so cool. Like it's a great story. It really is.
Yeah. So this movie, like we kind of mentioned, it came out March 4th, 2016, and it's directed. It was a co-directed movie by Byron Howard and Rich Moore. So I'm going to sneak in a mini fun fact before the three fun facts.
Okay.
So this movie was released in IMAX, and it was the first Disney animated film shown in IMAX since Treasure Planet in 2022.
Whoa.
So, yeah, apparently they're just like, we're done with IMAX. And then in 2016, they're like, you know what? Let's do it again.
Bring it back.
Yeah, so Treasure Planet was in IMAX. So when we talk about that movie, hopefully you can say, yeah, that's when I saw it.
Yeah.
So similar to Lion King, this movie has an absolutely stacked cast. So we have Jennifer Goodwin and Jason Bateman as the two leads. Mm-hmm. And we have Idris Elba, J.K. Simmons, Alan Tudyk, and of course, Shakira.
Of course.
As a voice and a singer. And you mentioned one thing that you like is soundtrack. So the score, I guess, is the more scientific term.
Yeah.
The score was composed by Michael Giacchino. And so he's done, is incredible. If you look up his stack, it's a lot. So to sum it up, you've got Star Wars, we got Marvel, we got Star Trek. But my favorite work he's done is he did the score for Up, which I was like, okay, well, he's in the top iconic for doing that score.
Yeah, I ended up looking up all the different stuff that he has. I just looked up this movie on Spotify, and then as I was looking through his other stuff, I was like, wait, he did that movie, and he did that movie, and he did that movie? Like, yeah, so pretty prolific.
Crazy.
Yeah, Michael Giacchino.
Giancino is how I'm saying okay. it. That's just me.
Very Italian. Yeah.
Yes. You have to lean into it, I feel.
Yeah. And, you know, related to that, like, I think it's notable that there isn't any singing except for Shakira, you know, in the movie. And, you know, but that's fine. I think the movie is, I was kind of talking about the complex, like, character driven plot. And I don't think they would have been able to do everything that they wanted to do with the story had there been, you know, kind of the Frozen / Lion King / Cinderella, you know. Like yeah. singing parts in it,
yeah.
which is just cool that, like, you know, of course we love singing Disney movies, but it's also awesome to see Disney movies that don't have it. And
yeah.
It makes it, you know, a different kind of enjoyable for sure. And, you know, you bring up the score, the movie score is really, I guess, it didn't really stand out to me, I will say, upon a first watch. But then as I rewatched it, it complements the movie so well. And after I went and looked it up just to, like, listen to the soundtrack on its own, I'm definitely, like, adding it into the list of, like, movie scores that I just want to, like, have on in the background when I'm at work or something yeah. like that. Like, I don't know if you do that, but, like, listening to movie scores is a great way just to kind of, like, fill the space while you're trying to get stuff done. And this is a movie that's, you know, going in there now.
Yeah, it adds to the – I was thinking, like, it kind of adds to the kinetic energy of Zootopia
yeah.
where the music definitely makes it feel like the city is even more vibrant because the music definitely underpins that. So
mm-hmm.
I'm excited to listen to the score on its own because last night I was like, you know, this is pretty good because, yeah, it definitely makes the movie feel so much more bigger than it is.
Yeah. Now, each week we like to highlight a little window into some lesser-known facts about these films. So, Katie, what do you have for our three fun facts about Zootopia?
So, in tradition, my first fact is secretly 7,000 facts, but we're going to okay. go through it like it's one fact.
Of
and
course.
The fact is how Zootopia evolved from a single-cell idea to a full-fledged movie
okay.
that became the top of the box office food chain. I was very proud of that line when I wrote it. Ooh. So,
I'm impressed.
Thank you.
Yes.
So this story is very similar to Chris Sanders and Stitch. As I was writing it, I was okay. like, oh, the parallels. So... But it doesn't start with Sanders. It starts with a different guy. So this starts with Brian Howard. So Howard's career, so he's one of the co-directors. He is a true Disney fairy tale because he started his career as a tour guide at the park, formerly known as Disney's MGM Studios, which is now Disney's Hollywood Studios. And as we discussed previously, back then, back in the 90s, so long ago, Disney was operating one of their animation studios out of the park. So he was daydreaming about, you know, I'd love to be working in the animation studio. So he wrote to, call back again, one of the nine old men. Mm. He wrote to Frank okay. Thomas. So it's coming together. These are like infinity stones. We're
yeah,
going to collect an old
exactly.
man every week.
Yes, perfect.
So he wrote a letter saying, like, oh, I'd love to do what you do. And that was, you know, it was the 90s. You could get a job just walking into a place. So he got the job. They were like, you should work here. So he did an internship. And then in 1994, his dream came true and he secured a job as an animator. And so the parallels, they keep on going. He worked on Mulan, Lilo and Stitch and Brother Bear. So then his first directing job was Bolt, which is a very rare movie because I think it's one that I have seen and you haven't, which is a very special thing.
That is true. That is true.
Yeah. So he was nominated for Best Animated Feature for that film in 2008. And then he also co-directed Tangled, which is, so clearly he's a rock star if he is doing Tangled.
I mean, if just looking at that movie lineup, I'm like, yeah, I can dig this guy for sure. So
yeah, and similar to you digging this guy, so did the execs at Disney. So
okay.
at the time, John Lasseter was an exec. And once you impress the right people, apparently they just start saying, well, what do you want to do? Because obviously you're good.
Yeah.
So they did that with Sanders with him. He's like, what kind of films do you want to make? So he was a little less focused, though. He came up with like six ideas. But the common thing that kept coming up is anthropomorphic animals.
Okay.
So for our listeners at home that might not know what anthropomorphic animals mean, these are going to be any character that's an animal acting like a human. So
yeah.
things like Robin Hood. So they're going to basically be humans in every way, except they have the body of an animal and some traits of an animal.
Yeah.
So they were like, okay, so you really want to do the animal thing. And I like that because, you know, Robin Hood was a classic. So that was something they were excited about. But then from there, they was still all over the map. They were like, okay, we could do a spy movie. I've got an idea. I've got Space Pug, which I'm very sad Space Pug didn't happen. But okay. Fine.
Well, there's still time, Disney. Space Pug, yeah, right. Come on.
Yeah. So, and then they're like, okay, well, we'll do a spy hare, spy rabbit. And so like, okay, we'll do a spy movie. That'll be fun. And so it's going to be like a 60s movie.
Ooh.
And they're mapping it out and they're like, our favorite thing about this right now is the city. So they're like, okay.
Okay.
We like the city part of it. So now we're in a topia of zoos, so to speak. So that's when they're like, you know what? Let's make it where they're going to switch the plot from spy to a buddy cop film. It's kind of crazy when you think about Zootopia. It's a lot of bureaucratic jokes. Like, it's a lot about, like, office work and DMV. And
yeah.
So, I mean, they really, they're like, the city is a character.
I imagine you would really like Zootopia if you're, like, very civically involved, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if you work for your county clerk's office or something, you'd probably really like the movie.
Yeah, right. You'd be like, wow, I can't believe they made a movie about me. So yeah. They were like, okay, we love the movie. They moved it to present day, so to speak. And they're like, okay, so they're going to have a cop, Nick Wilde, and he's going to have a plucky sidekick, Judy Hopps. And then they're like, one more twist. They're like, wouldn't it be more interesting if it was a determined female lead and then like kind of a, you know, the sidekick is then Nick. So Judy was elevated. Nick was demoted. In short, that's how they landed at Zootopia, is through, you know, it evolved. It went from just a guy working at Disney to a movie that we know and love of Zootopia.
Sure. Man, that's super cool. So, and I, you know, it does kind of tie into the character-driven nature of the story that it sounds like how they developed the movie was they started with a place and with characters, and then the plot kind of came from that. And that's super fun.
Yeah, and it's kind of crazy to think that, I mean, the first thing they had was the city of Zootopia.
Yeah.
The city's called Zootopia, right? Now I'm thinking out loud. I've said it too many times where I'm like, the city's called
Zootopia. I am like 99.9% sure.
I know, now I'm like, oh, no.
I was rewatching it earlier before we hit play, and I remember from the start that Judy refers to Zootopia as like the place she wants to live. Yeah.
Okay.
The city's called Zootopia. Yeah.
Well, we'll come back to it in fact number three. But before we get to fact number three, we go to fact number two.
Yes, please.
So at this point, I'm going to need everyone to pause the podcast and go watch Zootopia and then come back. So now that everyone's back and they just watched the entire movie of Zootopia.
I know, I just did.
Yeah, right. It was good.
Yes.
So one thing you will have seen when you watch the movie Zootopia is dozens and dozens of different types of furry and fuzzy mammals. It's just, it's primarily mammals. I don't think there's anything besides mammals in this city.
Yeah.
So the animators, this is something where they had some experience in doing CGI or like the computer. I even wrote it down because I was like, you know, I need to know this. Computer generated imagery, CGI.
Yeah.
The last time they did fur was Bolt in 2008.
Okay.
But the task ahead of them of doing like everybody in the film is going to have a lot of fur meant that they needed to vastly improve what their technology was.
Okay.
So as a result, the software engineers at Disney, they had to create an entirely new program where it was going to make realistic fur. That's what it does. And the program they made was called iGroom, which I think is very cute. So they made this software and it gave them precise control of brushing and shaping and shading. And it even let them add like an undercoat to the fur. So, you know, like huskies have like two types of fur. It let them like program that in where like you have like that plushness and you programmed which animals are going to have what amount of hair where.
Yeah. Cause my mind is going to like the sheep, the little kid sheep at the start, you know, when Judy gets beat up. And it's like, yeah, that looks like sheep, you know, it looks like fluffy like that. Whereas, you know, her rabbit fur seems really like soft and smooth, like a rabbit would have, you know?
Yeah. So they had to basically, someone's job as a computer programmer is like, I am making fur program. And so They did tons of research. Apparently, they were going to, you know, Animal Kingdom. They were going to zoos. They were, they said they even, like, looked under microscopes to see how. So they were really getting into the fur. And you can tell, because when you look at it, you almost don't even think about it, because it looks so real that your brain doesn't even, like, question what you're looking at. It looks so natural.
Yeah.
So for my number-loving friends, both Judy Hopps and Nick Wilde each had around 2.5 million hairs, I guess.
Yeah.
So for comparison, Elsa had approximately 400,000 hairs on her head. So that means that Nick and Judy are approximately 12 times more hairy than the former Queen of Erica. So if that comes up on trivia.
Wow. Yeah. And when I think of, like, hair in Disney, I mean, I immediately go to Elsa, but
yes,
I mean, maybe I should be thinking of Judy Hopps and Nick Wilde when it comes to hair.
Yeah. Who'd and I mean, thought? I wonder if, like, the discount maybe, because they're wearing clothes. I mean, that was a big plot point in the movie, is that animals wear clothes. Yes. If you don't wear clothes, you're naked. But I wonder if, like, they made sure to wear, like, as much clothes as possible, because they're like, I don't want to do more hair. So they're like, Judy, you have to wear long sleeves.
Yeah. That's funny.
So now, this is our first CGI, or, like I said, computer-generated imagery film that we've covered. So I just want to take a moment to acknowledge that these films, they are such a not weird, but unique mix of science and art.
Yeah.
So it's very cool that they take science. So, you know, you think of STEM as being like this cold, hard thing, but it takes STEM and turns it to STEAM, where you got the art in it. And, you know, people are programming fur. They also had a renderer called Hyperion. They had another program called Nitro, which is just how the fur moves. So they made the fur, but they wanted to make sure the fur blows and,
like,
moves and
accordingly, realistic, like when they're running or standing still. Yeah, like it's moving
and
the way
and
it
that
should.
It would match.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they wanted to make sure it matched, like, the shadows, and it matched their positioning, so, like, gravity would take it where it should go.
Oh, that's so crazy.
Yeah, and they even used a program called Bonsai, which I love these names. Great job, guys.
Oh, great names.
Bonsai was for trees and foliage. So basically, it would generate trees. And as you know, I mean, they were in different biomes with trees, and it helps generate the randomness of the trees. So that way, it looks good in the background.
Yeah, it looks natural. Yeah, and, you know, you kind of kicked off talking about the movie by saying, like, it is a visual treat. And, like, this just goes to show, like, you know, Disney, you accomplished your goal. Like, you spent probably millions upon millions of dollars to make sure it looked really good. And guess what? It worked.
Yeah. Because
it does look really, it is impressive. Like, just going back to watch the movie again to prep for this episode, it's everything about it, from the shading to the colors themselves. And yeah, just the life likeness that these animated animals have it's incredibly impressive.
Yeah. It made me think of, I mean, that's a small aside, but the movie Coco is another one like it, where the backgrounds, I'm like, I want to go there. Like, you see the backgrounds, you're like, let me go in.
Yeah, you just want to crawl through your TV screen, like Poltergeist-like.
but in a non-scary Poltergeist.
But in a non-scary way, yeah. So you can hang out with Nick Wilde, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, they did lots of technology to make Zootopia come true.
Yeah, super cool. Well, what's your third fact?
Third fact is, so we talked about, well, what's the name? And that's a great question, because Zootopia is a worldwide hit. But if you traveled around the world to meet other Zootopia fans, they might be confused when you say you love Zootopia.
Huh.
And that is because in other countries like United Kingdom, other European countries, the Middle East, North Africa, the film was called Zootropolis instead of Zootopia. So, and those are for a couple of reasons. So Zootopia is like zoo and utopia.
Yeah.
But Zootropolis is combining zoo and metropolis instead of utopia. And this is due to the most fun reason of the world, of legal reasons.
Lawyers.
So, yes. So there's a zoo there's a Danish zoo called Zootopia. So they're like, all right. So they named it Zootropolis in those countries, except in Germany. It's called Zoomania because apparently there was already a book called Zootropolis. So,
whoa.
So depending where you go, it's either Zootopia, Zootropolis, or Zoomania. So, and I'm sure there's other names that are probably, it's very popular in China. I heard that, like, it was a movie that they're like, oh my gosh, like it was playing in theaters longer than they, Yeah. And they actually, this is another bonus fact, is I think end of last year, they opened the Zootopia ride in Shanghai.
Okay.
Because there's a Zootopia land in Shanghai right now.
Okay. Well, that sounds super fun. I want to go to that.
Yeah, if you want to have a moment of, whoa, the dark ride is kind of kooky. You like get in a cop car and you like solve a mystery. And
oh, really?
Yeah, it's very interesting. I'm wondering if we'll get it one day. People say maybe Animal Kingdom, but the counterpoint to that is Zootopia is not real. So Animal Kingdom's all based on reality. So they're like, well, I don't know if Zootopia makes sense in a park about real animals. But
well, Disney, figure it out. Put it somewhere because it belongs somewhere.
That's all I got to say. Well, the real reason I want to go, the ride, cool, whatever, but they have the giant popsicle.
Oh my gosh, of course they do.
I know.
I need to eat a real life popsicle.
I know. So the fourth fact is some people in the world have had a giant popsicle and it's not me, and I'm sad. So that's the final fourth fact.
Maybe we'll make a video for the summertime of like how to make your like a DIY popsicle at home.
Yeah. Yeah. You know?
Stick them in your own freezer.
Without any hustles.
Yeah.
Hustle-free.
Yeah, popsicles. Exactly. Yeah, you don't have to melt a previous popsicle down the roof of a building and collect it into a jar in order to make these popsicles. Yeah.
Yeah, do they have OSHA violations in Zootopia? Interesting question.
Yeah, you know, she busted Nick for the tax evasion, but, you know, she very well could have busted him for some health code violations.
Exactly.
So, well, very cool. Thank you, Katie. To recap, what were we saying? The three facts were, the first fact is that it evolved from a single idea.
The evolution.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the second fact is that the technology, right? And then the third fact was the name of Zootopia from around the world being, what was it? Zootropolis and Zoomania.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You got it.
Okay. So. Well, Let's jump into the cards now. So while the movie boasts a pretty large cast of characters, currently Lorcana contains a total of 5 cards drawn from Zootopia. So the breakdown of those 5 cards is we have 1 Nick Wilde, 1 Judy Hopps, 1 Chief Bogo, 1 Duke Weaselton, and then lastly, we can't forget this one, 1 Popsicle. So
yeah.
Yeah, what do you think about the Zootopia cards, Katie?
It's shocking how little there are, because it's like you look at the movie and there's so many characters and things. So I was like, oh, really? It's 5? And the fact that one of them's Duke Weaselton, I'm like, well, which I know why. I'll discuss why he got in. But
okay.
So, and as a firm hater of Sapphire, it's not anything. It's not playing against Sapphire. Oh, it's a little bit that.
It's too. A little bit that. Yeah, that's fine. You can say it.
Yeah, because I played Sapphire and I was like, it's too much. It's too many cards. It's too much ink. It's too much. And then playing against Sapphire, like, what are you doing over there? It's like a magic trick. They're constantly like turning things and making cards come up. And I'm like, I don't know what they're doing.
I have 14 ink now.
Yeah. They're like, I actually inked my entire deck. I have 60 ink. And I'm like, okay. So I haven't had to play a lot of those cards. But one thing I do want to call out is I'm very impressed. One thing I thought that Lorcana was only doing 2D animations, but this proves that no, they're not only doing 2D. Obviously, they're doing Encanto too.
Mm-hmm.
But I love how they adapted the art, where basically they made it match what the other cards look like, that warmth of a 2D while still honoring the character designs.
I think the artists have done a really good job of that, because, you know, really since Princess and the Frog, Disney's gone, you know, all in on the 3D animation. So, but all of the cards obviously are still 2D. So I think the artists have done a really good job of doing that. Like, one card that comes to mind is the Elsa card by Nicholas Cole, not the Matthew Robert Davies one. I mean, that card's obviously, you know, we might talk about that card as an enchanted later. But I'm looking it up on my phone right now. It's Elsa Snow Queen.
Oh, the one that's on the art, like the cover of Chapter 1 stuff.
Yes, exactly. And I think there's a D23 promo of that card. But that, like, 2D Elsa, like, oh, it looks so good. But, yeah, I mean, Judy looks really good. Like, Nick looks really good. So, yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. And like I said with Duke Weaselton, I like knowing that there's somebody – in Ravensburger headquarters that they sat down and they're like, hey, in chapter two, we need to make a callback to chapter one by echoing the niche cross movie joke of Duke of Weselton and Duke Weaselton. I really like that someone's like, no, we have to do it. And they're probably, someone probably is like, why Duke Weaselton? They're like, it's a part of a thing. It's something I'm doing.
Yeah.
So I love thinking about that person at work, making sure that happened. And whoever that was, thank you.
Thank you. Yes. And if anybody knows the fun fact behind that relationship, like if there truly is, like I have to assume there is a real connection between Frozen.
Yeah.
And Duke Weaselton in Zootopia. So like, if somebody knows that story, please tell me. I really want to know, because that's super funny to me. I agree 100%.
Yeah. So I love a good joke that is a lot of work for what might seem like a small payoff, but I think it's a huge payoff.
Oh yeah. Yeah. For those who are in on it, it's a huge payoff for sure. So, these cards are great cards. You know, I'm going to spend my time, I'll probably spend most of my time talking about one of them, but I'll talk about the four Sapphire cards first. I think I just love the fact that the four Sapphire cards can be played on curve and like really complement them each other, right? So you can play Popsicle on turn one, Duke Weaselton on turn two, Judy on turn three and banish the Popsicle, and then Nick Wilde on turn four and bring the Popsicle back. Like, I think that's super cool. And then Duke has Ward. So, you know, he's at least going to get to quest for two lore at least once. So all three of them have two lore. And I think even Chief Bogo has two lore as well. So they kind of have some consistency there, which is pretty cool. Yeah, Chief Bogo also has two lore. So, yeah, that's pretty fun. You know, he's in Steel, not Sapphire. That's just like a huge flavor win, I think. And talking about like double feature decks, you know, one of the big things about a double feature deck is you have to have a draw engine. Like anybody knows in playing Lurkana, you need to have a way to draw cards. But if you're going to limit yourself to only two movies, how can you make sure that you have like a consistent way to draw cards? And Popsicle plus Judy Hopps plus Nick Wilde is actually like a pretty good way to like draw cards for a double feature deck, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, the synergy, it's great when you're playing it. I don't like being against it. But yeah.
Yeah.
It's very cool how they synergize. I think, you know, so many other movies, you know, once you have 10 or more, how do you get all 10 to synergize? I guess the dwarfs are looking at me like, we synergize. But other than the dwarfs, across the movie, sometimes it kind of feels like they're all over different colors. And this one, you could definitely have a deck where you reasonably run all five of the cards and it wouldn't be crazy.
Yeah. You're exactly right. I mean, you could run a Sapphire Steel deck that, you know, like let's say you committed to the double feature idea and you had all five of those cards in there. I mean, that takes up 20 of your cards. Now you still got to find another 40 with one other movie, but still, yes. I mean, all five of those cards do pretty good work. So,
yeah. So I would love to see more characters, I hope, in the next set. I mean, gosh, we're on set three, so there's gonna be more.
Yeah.
I'm confident. I love the villain, Jenny Slate as Dawn Bellwether. I think that's such a fun villain. So I'd really love her to be a villain card where
Poisons. It has to happen. I think
it'd be so fun for her to give everybody Reckless, because that's what she does in the movie. So something where she gives one person, some people, she needs to give somebody Reckless, in my opinion. So
yeah.
I think that would be
You're referring to the fact that she like shoots them with the serum and then they become like ravenous.
Yeah. So she could be the Nightshade or something, or even they could make a Nightshade or Nighthowler. Sorry. Nighthowler.
Yeah. The Nighthowler.
They could do that as like an effect or an action or something where all your characters have consumed.
Or like an item or something. Like banish this item, give a character Reckless.
Yeah. And then my other two is, I think Zootopia as a location, only because I want it to be enchanted and I want it to be holographic. So it's like a caveat that I want a very sparkly rainbow Zootopia enchanted card. So
yes.
That's a land I wouldn't be mad about. I'd be okay if I got that enchanted.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. It has to go in Sapphire and... You know, I don't know if it could be like Montanui and it helps you ramp or something like that. But yeah, I mean, a Zootopia location's got to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it could even be like Neverland and just sit there and look pretty. I won't be mad.
Exactly. So, yeah, you know. I won't be upset McDuck about Manor, that.
McDuck Manor just sits and has a big butt, and that's all
it
does.
And that's great. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and my last one, this might be a little too dark, but I would love a Floodborne Judy Hopps where she's a street scammer and she was converted by Nick. And now Judy is like doing a hustle. So like every time she's challenged, you lose a lore, and she's like pickpocketing your lore. I would love a dark, seedy Judy where she's like, you know what? No, I don't want to be a cop. I want to be like Nick. And it goes the other
way. That is spicy. Nick ends up recruiting Judy instead of the other way around.
Yeah. And that's, you know, Floodborne, that's what it's for. It's for your imagination. She's not really bad, but what if she was?
You know? Well, I actually had an idea for a Judy Hopps Floodborne card as well. But it's a little bit different. I want it to be called Judy Hopps Giant Bunny. And it's a sapphire version of Tinkerbell Giant Fairy.
I love that.
And it could like... maybe she could be like a 7 cost with a 5 cost shift or something, kind of to keep with the, you know, you could keep playing them on curve. So, you know, you play Nick Wilde on turn 4 and then you could shift Judy Hopps on turn 5 or something like that. I don't know exactly what she would do, but I think because one thing that they make a really big point about, and this is kind of interesting as I was watching the movie, you know, they make a big deal about the fact that Judy Hopps is really small, right? Like she shouldn't be a cop because of her size. And, you know, Tinkerbell is small, so you kind of have a Floodborne version where they're both really big. I think that'd be funny. But one part of the movie that really stood out to me was they're at the wedding. Do you remember what those little creatures are called? You know, the mafia guy?
I feel like there'd be a shrew.
A shrew of some kind? Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know. They got the little nose, but
yeah,
you know.
They have that long nose thing. I don't know exactly what they are, but like
moles? Maybe they're moles.
Mole? Yeah, something like that. Anyways, they're invited to the wedding and they start eating the dessert, and Nick Wilde is like eating the dessert and it's like so small going into his mouth. And I'm like, man, if you think about the scale of this movie, like you could seemingly have an elephant at a wedding for a shrew where the dessert is like normal for these little mice things, but like I don't know if an elephant could even see it, you know, because of how small that little dessert was. So, that was kind of funny.
No, I think Giant Judy, I'm here for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Could be fun. You know, another Judy Hopps character with like an ability that says, I don't know when to quit. You know, that's kind of like her line from the start. The bully fox like tells her that, and you know, maybe like every time she could kind of have like that scar ability or the Captain Hook ability where when you challenge, you can re-ready after the challenge or something like that. That could be like a good Ruby version of Judy.
Yeah.
I also think Bellwether, you know, as a villain would be awesome, where as like her smaller version, like a 2 or 3 drop, she's like all innocent and like helpful. And then like her Floodborne version is where she's like super sinister. I think she goes straight in Emerald for sure in my mind, but
because she starts out like just a little guy, and then by the end you're like, oh, she was the villain the whole time.
Yeah, and then one item that I thought would be fun is the carrot pen.
Yes,
you know, it comes up throughout the movie, and that's what ends up getting Bellwether at the end of it all is they have that. So I don't know if it's an item that you could have in play that like has some sort of, okay, here's what I thought. So when you record something on the carrot pen, it is using the words of the villain against them, right? So the villain thinks that they have finally won, but you use the carrot pen to turn it against them. So like maybe it's an item that you have on the field that whenever a villain character quests, you gain the same amount of lore as that villain is gaining for your opponent or something like that.
It could also be cool, like if you were able to, whatever action you play, the other person can play it the next turn. Like if you play an action, they have the ability to play whatever action you played on their turn.
Yeah, exactly. So like if my opponent plays Mother Knows Best on me to bounce one of my characters back to my hand, then I can bounce one of their characters back to their hand on my turn or something like that.
Yeah, everything you do has like an echo. I think that could be fun.
Yeah.
So I love that.
And then Flash, the sloth, you know.
Yes.
I mean, come on. If we're going to name characters by name, I mean, there are lots of characters that should go in this game, but
exactly.
I don't know what Flash would do, like enter Exerted, and I don't know. We just got to get him in there. He's hilarious. Like,
yes.
He doesn't even have to be that good or something. I just want to be able to draft him or something, you know.
So. I know. Yeah, he can be one of those, like, just big guys. Kind of like how I had a policy where every time I saw a Goofy Knight for a day, I drafted him purely just because I liked him and I wanted to maybe play him one day. You make Flash one of those guys where he's just there and I'm going to draft him because I love him and that's it.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, I could see him because he's really slow, right? And a slow card in Lorcana is one that kind of, you have to pay a lot of ink for it, but it doesn't like affect the board right away, right? So maybe Flash could be like a 6 or a 7 drop that just like quests for 3 or something like that, but doesn't have an on-play ability or anything like that. Yeah. So he's a slow card, you know?
I love it. So yeah.
Anyways, those are some fun card ideas.
Yeah, no, I love it. I'm excited. I think it's so fun that we're in the beginning because it's like the only way we go is up. There's more. So
yes, exactly.
I was still blown away that there's only 3, but there'll be more. I wouldn't be surprised if we're going to see more in Ursula's Return. They've only officially revealed like 20 cards or so.
I know. It's been, you know, we're going to date ourselves from when we recorded this to when it comes out. But at this point, the last card that was revealed was the 1-drop Pegasus. And I'm like, come on, I need more. Like, I love that card, but like, come on, Ravensburger. I know you're working on these challenge events, but also cards, please.
I love, though, that we all were, like, so hungry. We're like, Pegasus. Like, any other day, Pegasus wouldn't have been, you know, a huge deal. But because we're starved and it was the only card that day, it was just like, everyone, look, have you seen it? And like, yeah, that's a nice little Pascal, but green.
Yeah, that's exactly.
Fun. So yeah, I'm very excited. If I could, this would be the part in the episode where I start blasting the song "Try Everything," yes. The song they play at the last. Yeah, because no matter how many times I've seen this movie, that song always makes you feel just instantly optimistic.
Yeah.
I feel fuzzy, warm, and it may be because I love a good montage, which I do,
of course.
But in reality, I think it's because Zootopia. It reminds us of a hopeful message that even though life can be hard and being negative and jaded is easy, we shape the world we want to live in by trying to be the best versions of ourselves and treating people around us with kindness and empathy. So yes. I think her speech at the end, it kind of brings it together. You know, life is messy. Do your best. I don't know. Show up. I think that's just, you know, good for any person at any point.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I do like the message that the movie sends, and you know, any sort of movie is trying to send some sort of message that you can grow from. All good stories do that, and I do think that Zootopia like does a good job of doing that. Like, it's a movie that I feel inspired by and want to be a better human because of it. And you know, I think all of us have something to learn from Judy and from Nick and from everybody else. So
yeah, and at the end of the day, we all want to try a giant popsicle.
Yes, exactly. So. And popsicles come with it. Exactly. So sign me up.
So for our audience, how does Zootopia make you feel? What characters or locations are you hoping to see in our next sets moving forward? Make sure to sound off on Twitter and Instagram because I love hearing other people's ideas. Armchair Illumineering. It's my favorite, and I love hearing other people do it too.
If you ever want to, like, just run ideas by somebody, you just know that the Hakuna Lorcana team is like, oh, yes, and, like, what about this and what about this? Like, we love talking about that stuff. Now, in addition to your responses to today's episode, each week we like to turn the mic to you, our listeners, to see what questions you have about Disney and the world of Lorcana. This week we have a question from Adam that reads, what do you think is the most beautiful card? And I think I want to split it up to say, like, Katie, what do you think is the most beautiful normal card? And then what is the most beautiful enchanted?
Ugh, I know. I'm glad we split it up because, you know, it's 2 different categories.
Two different levels, obviously, for sure.
Anytime you add holographic, honestly, it could be just a blank holographic. It could be one of those discards that's holographic. And I'm like, that's the most beautiful one.
That's so sick.
Yeah, if anything's holographic, I'm in. But as far as normal cards or non-enchanted, I would love to give a deep cut and be like, oh, no, I've got this really deep one you've never heard of. But no, I am a clown for Puhani Wizard. John Lauren, I believe, is the artist for that one.
So good.
Yeah, I'll talk about it every episode. I'll beat that dead horse. I love it. It's so pretty. I love how it like echoes out where you've kind of got like this concentric honey world around him. It's just, it's pretty, it's cool. It's Winnie the Pooh being a wizard, which enough said.
Yes.
So yeah, that's my favorite non-enchanted, but why isn't there an enchanted?
Yes.
That's a different question mark for a different day. Yes. So what's your favorite non-enchanted?
Non-enchanted? Well, I'm going to mention the same artist, John Lauren, buddy, you knocked it out of the park. Whatever it is you're doing, please keep doing it, because Robin Hood Daydreamer is, it's funny that they call the enchanted cards enchanted, because I would describe both Pooh Honey Wizard and Robin Hood Daydreamer as enchanting cards. Like they want me, similar to what we were saying about the movie, like I want to crawl into these cards and be a part of them. You know, just the attention to detail and the coloring, and Robin Hood just looks so relaxed as he's, you know, laying on his raft. And it's just like, it's such a beautiful card. He went really hard for these cards. So
yeah,
I'm very happy about that.
Yeah, that one I bought the deck box purely because I'm like, it's pretty. Yeah, like, it I looks didn't need so it, but nice. I saw it.
Yeah, exactly.
I was like, yeah, I'm buying it. Yeah. Also, I still have that scarcity mindset. If I see anything Lorcana, something in my brain's like, you gotta buy it. And I'm like, no, stop.
I'll go into other people's LGSs, and I like see deck boxes or sleeves or something, and I like put it in our Discord of like, does anybody need this? And everybody's like, no, we have it at our LGS. And I'm like, oh, okay. Just thought I'd ask.
I know. Well, we survived the great Chapter 1 war, so yeah. I think we're allowed to be jaded, I think, or at least scarred from that.
Yeah, exactly. So, Katie, what's those are our non-enchanted cards, even though they are enchanting, but what is your favorite, like, most beautiful enchanted card?
This one, it feels like I'm cheating, but I'm not, because I think it's scientifically pretty close to being
right.
It
certainly is.
Yeah, so it is the classic Elsa, Spirit of Winter, Enchanted by
good.
Matthew Robert Davies. This is the time where I flex and everyone's going to say, oh, we can't relate to her. She's so cool. It's because I did pull an Elsa and I peaked. I think that's why I haven't pulled any Enchanted since Chapter 1, is I think I pulled the Elsa and whatever Lorcana spiritual advisors, they're like, she's done. And that was like the last one. But oh. It's so pretty. It's so pretty in person. Have you seen it in person?
I think, I have. I've seen one or two in person. And,
yeah.
Oh, it's man. Just so it is breathtaking. Like, it really is.
Yeah. So would I pay $2,000 for it? No. But no, I wouldn't.
No. We wouldn't do that, so. Katie. We wouldn't do it.
I know. No, because I have one.
Yes, exactly. That's why.
So it is kind of crazy, though. I remember, like, briefly she was $300. So I'm sure there's somebody out there that sold
Katie,
it for $300.
Don't remind me. I remember the date was like October 17th, 2023. Like,
oh, yeah.
People were giving up on Lorcana. People couldn't find cards. And, you know, people were getting ready for set two. And Enchanteds were at an all-time low price. And there was stock on TCG Player. And I didn't buy a single one.
That's my other humble brag is, I got Cinderella for $150 and Belle for $125 because I'm like...
That's so crazy.
Yeah, that was an exciting time. But now I'm like, I look at my Enchanteds on my kitchen table. I'm like, oh my God, that's like a lot of money. That's like my car.
Yeah,
so,
it seriously is.
So now I need to get it insured or something. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
So what's your favorite Enchanted?
Well, you just said her name, and you might think I would say Belle, which I do love the Belle Enchanted, but there's something special about Cinderella. The Cinderella ballroom sensation, Casey Robin, amazing job. I don't know how it's possible to get a card that looks like it is there's electricity in the card, you know? Like somehow there's light in it. And it's radiating out. It's not just reflecting light, but it's generating its own light. And that's what this card feels like. I've gotten to see, you know, I don't have this one, but I've seen it a few times in person. And it is such an impressive card. She's, you know, when we think about Disney princesses and their dresses and whatnot, like there's a lot of classic dresses. Elsa is an iconic dress, you know, Belle's golden dress, but Cinderella's light blue dress is just so iconic with her headband and her necklace, like her long white sleeves on her arms. It's so classically Disney and Casey did a great job with this piece of art. So I'm always impressed when I look at this card.
And I think the whole universe today, we can all say in unity that the prettiest card that we all want this week and next week and the week after is that Rockstar Surge Enchantment. I can't stop looking at it.
Yes, exactly.
I'm like, look at that little guy and his little tuft of hair. I can't. Yeah. He's bewitching.
And then
he's
and got his my guitar soul. And yeah, he's just so cool. Yeah.
I know. Oh, so man. That's the honorable mention is.
Well, come back in a few weeks, Katie, and you know, we're both going to say that we have a Stitch promo card, Rockstar Stitch promo card, because I believe yeah, but mine it. Will we're be going to have it.
Mine's going to be because I beat up a guy in the parking lot, but yours will be because you won, but mine will be through
sheer strength. And,
yeah.
I'll help you beat him up. If that,
yeah, that's right. Yeah, at that point, we'll be like, honestly, they're friends. They drove together. We just have to follow. So no one beat up anybody, but I hope everyone listening, somehow we all magically win.
Yes.
We all get one.
Yes, exactly.
So, Adam, thank you for your question. If you, the listener, would like to have your question answered by us, please feel free to email us at questions@HakunaLurkanaPod.com or reach out to us on Twitter @HakunaLurkana. If your question is selected, we will send you an exclusive Hakuna Lurkana sticker for you to show off to all your friends at League. We even saw somebody put it on their car, which is amazing. I'm like,
yes.
Oh, I was honored. I was like, that's the greatest honor that anyone's ever done.
Yeah, we recently just started seeing the tweets of people saying that they got the stickers and the giveaways that we've been doing, and that's super special. So thank you for sharing that with us. Thank you so much for sharing the show on Twitter and Instagram and sharing it with your friends. Like, it really does go such a long way when you do those things, and it really, you know, it validates us. I'm not going to lie, you know, like, it feels great. And so we love being a part of this community. You know, Katie and I have been playing since the game started and having interacted with different content creators over the months. And now that we are content creators, like, it's so much fun to be able to interact with folks we've never met before and everything. So just thank you for that support. And another way that you can support us is by leaving reviews on whatever site that you listen to your podcasts on, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, you know, 5-star reviews, all of those things really help with the algorithm and making sure that other people can see the show. So again, thank you so much to our listeners in these first few episodes. We're really humbled and we're excited to keep having a good time, you know, talking about Disney movies. So, and next week we will be gathering an expedition team and traveling to a lost civilization as we cover the film Atlantis. So make sure you brush up on your ancient linguistics, because I'm sure Katie will be presenting her findings in fluent Atlantean. So make sure you brush up on all that. And as always, thank you for hanging out with us today. And until next time, Hakuna Lurkana means no worries.